Zain El Amin, you've just written a fascinating article in Extra, the magazine for fairness and accuracy in reporting, for the September edition, entitled D.C. Schools Chancellor Michelle Rhee, Media's Favorite School Reformer. It seems appropriate this Labor Day to talk about Michelle Rhee and these school reforms, and particularly how they've impacted labor, how they've impacted teachers. Welcome.
Thank you, Pete. I mean, to start with, I always start with the fact that whatever Rhee is doing now was predictable when she was hired. For anyone that knows the basic steps of privatization of any public entity, it was predictable. The reason why I say that is, speaking of labor, when Michelle Rhee was hired, we had the feeling that ultimately she's going to be the most effective she's going to be is in the role of union buster. And that's the reason why, is because she only spent 3 years as an educator and 10 years as somebody who's leading a nonprofit that is basically saying that we have to fire bad teachers and hire good teachers. And the corporate interests in the city, they loved her because it goes well with union busting here. And on the other hand, on the one hand, it's the direct firing of teachers that she's done. Over 500 teachers have been fired and slandered at that. 266 teachers get fired, and she says, I fired them because they had sex with students, beat students, and so on. And yet those were the minute minority of what the teachers she fired. To be exact, only one teacher was accused of having sex with a student. Six were disciplined for using corporal punishment, and a few of them were tardy several times. So that's one aspect of it. But the other hidden, the invisible hand that's contributing to this, is basically the fact that she's letting charter schools proliferate, and for people who don't know, the charter schools are not unionized, and so the expansion of charter schools is allowing for the expansion, for basically the diminishment of unionized teachers in this city. Now, what the ultimate trick that Rhee uses, that and every neoconservative uses, is to paint the union leadership, the corrupt union leadership, people like George Parker, the president of the teachers union, who's corrupt, who is ignorant, pardon my, but this is the truth. I've confronted him about this, that he did not know that Fenty's whole plan for the takeover of the schools is a union busting plan. Rather, he was looking at minutiae and ended up supporting the takeover, which ended up undermining the whole teachers' union. Now, what Rhee and these neoconservatives do is they use these corrupt leaders, lump them with the teachers that are struggling in the classroom and against their own leadership, and say, those are all rotten. The teachers, they call them all the teachers' union, as if they're one entity. And actually, they have diverge interests, as we've seen with George Parker, who's now the teachers' union has to go under trusteeship, I don't know what's the correct word for it, but the American Federation of Teachers has to take over the teachers' union to fix the havoc that he's caused in the teachers' union. So basically what we need to say is that, first of all, the teachers and the teachers' union is important because we need an organizing tool. We need a better leadership for the union so that the teachers can better advocate for the students, because the way Rhee is putting out her message is as if the students' interests diverge from the teachers' interests, and that is not true. They're all part of our community. She is not part of our community.
Let's go back 3 years to Michelle Rhee coming to D.C. One of her very first acts was the closure of, well, they intended to close 24 schools, but John Burroughs Middle School, now it's been turned into an educational campus where you have elementary and middle school kids combined. It's very controversial and not necessarily a good thing for parents and students at these schools. She intended to close 24 schools. In your article, you point out some 15% of District of Columbia public schools. She closed 23 of them. This was one of her first acts as school chancellor.
Yes. One of the things to take note of is that why was John Burroughs, if there's a science to what this woman is doing, why was John Burroughs being shut down? And why was John Burroughs never shut down and rather changed? The only difference for John Burroughs was the fact that, first of all, there was no justification whatsoever. Secondly, the only reason why there was it came out that there's no justification to shut down John Burroughs is because parents like Maria Jones in Ward 5 and others got together, some of the best citizens, call them citizens before I call them activists that I've seen, got together and organized and confronted her about this and did educationals and went, you know, at one point did an educational at the Wilson building, you know, while she was going among the communities. But that's why John Burroughs remains that. And if more people fought Rhee and organized against this scam, that there would have been less schools closed.
Zain El-Amin, you begin your piece in Extra entitled D.C. Schools Chancellor Michelle Rhee, Media's Favorite School Reformer, like this. Quote, after Washington, D.C. Mayor Adrian Fenty pushed for a mayoral takeover of the city's school system and dissolved the school board, he chose a relative unknown to take charge. But it wouldn't take long before she would become a national media darling. End quote. A national media darling. Talk about the media coverage, the extensive media coverage that Michelle Rhee has garnered, particularly the Washington Post. This is a newspaper that continues to promote and protect her so-called school reform efforts.
Yes. If you read these articles, like a lot of concerned parents and teachers are plagued with fatalism because they've been subjected to shock and awe for years and years. But if you really look and examine these articles, even though she's the darling, their attempt to put her in a good light even fails if you really read it carefully. The Washington Post has material incentives, which I'll talk about. But let's take, for example, the Time magazine article that everybody was upset about, you know, that people who knew what was going on in schools were upset because they saw Rhee being held up in this Time magazine article. And on the cover, she was shown with a broom, etc. But in the article itself, it shows you, you see Rhee making fun of the teachers, belittling them, the parents, talking about the interests of the students being different than the interests of the parents and the community, that she's siding with the students and so on. She does all of this, and throughout the whole time, the reporter has an agenda, which is to say that no matter how awful you think Rhee in the way she treats the community, ultimately she treats the students well. And in saying that, the reporter gives the one example about a student in Anacostia in Ward 8 that contacts her, and she responds immediately. He brings his friends, and they tell her, we're lacking in computer equipment. And she responds, as the superhero that she is, responds immediately and fixes the problem. And then if you have the stomach to continue reading to the end of the article, then you realize the the reporter contradicts herself, because towards the end of the article, the reporter begins to say, well, you know, the approach can be controversial, because she goes back to the story of the student from Ward 8 calling Ree, and she goes, the student actually gave me a more nuanced story, and proceeds to tell not a more nuanced story, but a different story than what Ree had told her. The student tells her a different, not a more nuanced story. And the story is this, is that the student says, I gathered my friends, and we sat down with her, and yes, we did tell her about the computer equipment, but we also told her about all kinds of problems with the facilities, with the rundown facilities in our schools, and those problems haven't been fixed. But furthermore, he tells her that Ree fired my principal, who I thought to be, who I considered to be a mentor and a mother, and that he actually wrote an angry email, which she never responded to. So ultimately, not even the students are being listened to. Only if the students ask for something that fits Ree's careerist, ambitions and her agenda in proving that what she's doing is right. But if they ask for something that doesn't fit, she's not responding. So the school system has fallen a victim of the career and political ambitions of both Ree and Fenty, both of whom will not have to put up with the long-term repercussions, because both can easily get corporate jobs tomorrow because of the way they've pushed the corporate agenda in our city.
Zain El Amin, you mentioned the case of this student and their friends talking to Michelle Ree and talking about the firing of their principal. On this Labor Day, let's also talk about principals who have been fired en masse, and as well as teachers, as well as other employees of DCPS. And then there's also the folks who have decided, like James Booten, who I had a chance to interview a couple weeks ago, who just couldn't put up with the atmosphere that was created, and so he's leaving for the public school system in New York. So there's a huge amount of firings, there's a huge amount of people who have left, and it hasn't really been brought front and center, but maybe it's appropriate to do so on this Labor Day.
Yes, most definitely. Not only the firings, but there's an atmosphere of fear. She's running things based on fear in the school system. That is Ree. For example, in writing my article, I interviewed award-winning teachers and people that are working in DCPS that didn't want their name used, even though they have an excellent record. They've been there for a long time. So there's a lot of fear and censorship that's going on, because as you mentioned yourself, this reform is reform by press release, and anything that can hurt that these press releases or contradict these press releases that Ree is sending out, that her office is sending out, has to be shut down. And there's an atmosphere of fear. The principals are operating on the basis of fear, and the teachers are operating on the basis of fear. And that's what's why our school system has this crazy culture right now, where even when Ree sits there in front of the incoming teachers and tells them a story that she had actually taped shut the mouths of her students in her first year as a teacher in Baltimore, that we have new teachers laughing with her about this, the fact that she actually punished these students physically and made their lips bleed when they removed the tape off of their mouths, and she's laughing about this, and this has become acceptable. What degree of rot have we gotten in our school system that we allow somebody with that record of abuse, with that disdain for the community, to run roughshod over us, you know?
Zain, earlier you mentioned the financial interests of the Washington Post, and I wanted to finish there.
Yes.
Because it's not just that Michelle Ree puts out press releases. They then run oftentimes, you know, as editorials in the Washington Post, as well as in the news pages.
Yes.
This is a newspaper that has been hell-bent on putting forward her agenda.
Yes.
And I think that the interests, well, what are the Washington Post interests? It is it a neutral, objective player here?
By no measure is it neutral, in the sense that it is in the business of education. The Washington Post Company is first and foremost an education company, and secondly, a media company. And the reason why I say that is because they do own Kaplan, and it's a, you know, it's a testing agency, and they're in the business, and they have a subsidiary of a venture capital subsidiary, Kaplan Venture Capital. And the thing about the Washington Post is that it's making most of its money from this education company rather from the newspaper. So they're making right now, as of 2009, something close to $2.6 billion from Kaplan, while they're making about a little more than $700 million from the newspaper itself. And so they're highly motivated to support the kind of quote-unquote reform that Ree is pushing forward, which is test-heavy. The corporate model that's being pushed by Ree benefits the Washington Post financially. That's why they've forgiven all her sins every time she has done something egregiously wrong.
Any final thoughts you want to share on this Labor Day, Zain El-Amin?
I think at this time of election, I want to say, first of all, that despite the fact that Ree has attached herself to Fenty, she's attached her fortunes to Fenty. Actually, her fortunes are attached to corporate America and to Fenty, so she can't lose. But the point is, despite the fact that they're a team, by no measure should people believe that Vincent Gray is any different. He is for the same kind of policies that she is pushing. He is just as ignorant about what's going on nationally. And even if he's aware, he tends to be more aware than Fenty. He will serve the corporate masters that Fenty has served. So the only thing that I would encourage citizens to do is her parents to organize, just as like the John Barrows parents organized. You need to organize around election time when these people, when these corporate agents are most vulnerable, and we need to make our voices heard. I don't want anybody to understand that Gray is actually a progressive alternative. In fact, there's speculation that he'll probably hire one of Ree's co-directors, because he wants to carry on the same kind of reform. And his blind support for charter schools is very telling of what he wants to do and how similar is his program in terms of education. And despite the fact that teachers are gathering behind Gray, it should be said that this is a reaction to the assault that Fenty has and Ree have subjected them to.
Thanks, Zain El-Amin.
You're welcome.